My guest is Erin Martin Fournier. She's the Advocacy Services Director at Community Works. Erin is one of the speakers at Alba Park. Well, she was one of the speakers at Alba Park in downtown Medford on October 9th for an event marking Domestic Violence Awareness Month. Welcome back to The Exchange, Erin.
Thank you so much for having me, Mike. I'm happy to talk to you all today.
Well, tell me about your role at Community Works.
Yes. So as the Director of Advocacy Services, I oversee the various programs that we run supporting survivors of domestic violence, sexual assault, stalking, and human trafficking. That includes our emergency shelter, our transitional housing programs, along with our justice services programs in the court and parole and probation, and also community advocacy services located at DHS self-sufficiency, child welfare, and also other community-based organizations, such as like the Children's Advocacy Center.
And how long have you been there?
I've been with Community Works for actually 7 years today. This is my seven-year anniversary.
So October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month. What should we be aware of?
The number one thing that I think everyone should be aware of around domestic violence is, no matter what, everybody listening, you know someone who has either experienced domestic violence or is experiencing domestic violence. We have a high rate of abuse in our county and in our state, and it is one of the victimizations that does not know, and like, it doesn't care about someone's social status, about their race, their ethnicity, their gender, their sexual orientation. It is a victimization that impacts every single person in our county and in our world today.
So, Erin, that's a huge statement. You're saying that everybody knows someone who has been a victim of domestic violence. How prevalent is that problem in our region?
It is very prevalent. According to the Oregon Violent Death Reporting System, through law enforcement reporting on known deaths in our state, between 2013 and 2022, 69% of all homicides in our state were domestic violence related, and 69% of those were all women. It is very prevalent. We actually have 54% of DV-related homicides also that occurred in that time frame. They occurred in 5 of Oregon's 36 counties, and Jackson County is one of those counties. It is Multnomah County, Lane, Washington, Jackson, and Marion County have extremely high rates of DV-related homicides.
Okay, so that data refers to those who didn't survive. What about those who do?
Those who do, that is very important and often somewhat hard to track. So what we do know is, in Oregon, lifetime experiences of domestic violence that were reported to law enforcement, there were 39% of men reported abuse and 42% of women reported abuse. What we, of course, know, many people know working in this field, that, again, those statistics are just what is reported to law enforcement. A lot of times people do not report to law enforcement, and they use other means to attempt to get away and flee that unsafe relationship without ever getting any criminal legal system involved. Here at Community Works, annually, we serve over 300 people in our Dunhouse shelter alone that are fleeing abuse. In a calendar year, we serve over between 2,000 to 3,000 people in all of our services, from our helpline, including our Dunhouse shelter, and our ongoing services for those who don't access our shelter to try to get away from an abuser.
It sounds like you're dealing with this issue every single day.
Yes, we truly are. It is a everyday situation. We have new victims or survivors calling us, contacting us. Just oftentimes, they might be calling us to try to get into our Dunhouse shelter because they are in a situation where they are able and ready to leave. Also, we often have people calling us just saying right after an incident has occurred. Maybe, we are well connected with law enforcement, and anytime officers go out on a domestic call, they will connect the victim to our Dunhouse shelter staff via the phone to make sure that we can safety plan with them right away. Sometimes we're able to bring those folks into our shelter. Sometimes they are able to go stay with family and friends, but they need extra ongoing support, such as going to court and talking to one of our advocates to file a protective order, meeting with an advocate so they can continue to report other incidences of abuse, such as a strangulation that occurred maybe 2 months ago, to law enforcement to try to help move the investigation along for maybe additional charges. And also, again, sometimes folks just call us after an incident. They have never reported to law enforcement and they're not ready to leave, but they know that something in their relationship isn't right and isn't safe, and that they want something better for themselves. So we are able to start those conversations with them to have them think of a safer life. The other thing with domestic violence that happens is a lot of people, abusers are really good at manipulating folks, and they're really good at what they do, which is abuse people. So they are very good at manipulating the victim in believing that everything that is happening to them, whether it is physical or psychological abuse, is the victim's fault. If the victim would just do something different for the abuser, then the abuse wouldn't happen. And what we know is that isn't true. The abuser is choosing to harm someone, and their victim is not responsible for anything that is being done to them.
My guest is Erin Martin Fournier. She's the Advocacy Services Director at Community Works. So, Erin, this notion of just leaving is really hard because you're talking about leaving family, friends, community, your faith, churches, associations, your job. People have, entrenched interests, and they have settled into a place, and leaving an abusive situation is not just leaving that abusive situation, but is leaving all this other stuff.
Yes, that is correct. It is very, very hard. I love how, you put it, just leaving. It never is just leaving. Another really unfortunate statistic is that when someone does leave an abusive relationship or situation, the first 2 weeks after they've left that abusive situation is actually the most dangerous. The likelihood of them, the victim, having a serious assault or attack on them that is lethal, that would turn into a homicide, actually goes up exponentially within those first 2 weeks right after they left. So you're right. It isn't easy to just leave because they're leaving. They also may have children, and they have to navigate what that would look like. How do they leave with their children? They then still have to figure out custody with this abuser. Their abuser may be their sole income person in their household. So now they either have to, like you said, they might have to leave a job so their abuser can't find them, or they weren't allowed to have a job. So now they have to figure out how to leave and be in hiding from an abuser while also becoming an extremely independent person, being able to live sustainably on their own, raise their children potentially sustainably on their own, while also having that statistic out there that in the next 2 weeks, their abuser could find them and could unalive them, because that abuser has lost the ability to control them. Them leaving has shown that abuser that they have lost control of their partner. So that ratchets up the abusive behavior.
Yeah, it's hard to imagine. I mean, that threat hanging over your head, and then you have to not just reinvent your life, you have to actually create a new life. And with a ton of unknowns, you shared your own experience with the attendees of the event at Alba Park. Do you mind quickly sharing that with our listeners?
No, I don't mind at all. So, yes, I am a child survivor of abuse. I witnessed abuse. My mother was abused by my stepfathers repeatedly throughout my life. One of my first core memories that I shared at Alba Park was hearing my mother being physically and sexually assaulted by one of my stepfathers when I was four. And that has had a huge impact on me as a witness to that abuse. It left a mark of, you know, not understanding why someone would be so harmful to someone that I loved. And not like it makes it, you know, made it very difficult growing up to trust that other people were not going to be like not going to want to hurt me or hurt ones that I cared about because of what I witnessed. And to also see, you know, now to be older and to be on the other side of it and to see what I missed out on with my relationship with my mother because of the abuse that she endured, you know, she could not get away. We did not have a community works in my community where I grew up. We did not have a shelter for my mom to go to. We didn't have really a grassroots crisis line for anyone to help my mom. So the way my mom had to keep me safe was she had to send me to go live with my dad. So I was then around nine, I was primarily being raised by my father with only small visits with my mom. So I often think about, you know, those milestones that I missed out in a mother-daughter relationship and what she also missed out on. She did not get to witness me graduate high school. She did not get to witness me going to dances because it wasn't safe for her to be around me, and also the psychological toll that it put on her being abused, and her abuser also utilized substance use to keep control over her, so introduced her to alcohol and other hardcore substances to keep her under his control. So then my mother has addiction issues that also created where she was not able to be around me because of her addiction due to the abuse. So there's a lot of things that I and she missed out on. And that's why I truly believe that's why what led me to do this work when I grew up is that I'm happy that an organization like Community Works, I love working at Community Works, and I'm happy that we exist to help people in our community. And truly my goal is to do this work so then the kids out there that are like me and the parents that are out there like my mom have someone that they can go talk to and get support and get to safety and can intervene in those situations in a way so those kids and those parents can have a different outcome than what my mom and I have had, and they can have it at a sooner rather than later date.
Absolutely. And, oh, man, unfortunately, we're running out of time. And I just wanted to say I'm reading a riveting book titled Without Consent by Sarah Weinman, and it's about a landmark trial in Salem featuring Greta Rideout, who accused her husband of raping her in front of her two-year-old daughter, kind of like what you experienced. And the case was in 1978, and it drew a national and global spotlight of attention to Oregon. And I was just wondering, how prevalent is marital rape today in our area as we run out of time?
Oh, I don't have exact statistics on it. I will say it is pretty prevalent. Every client that we see, they do experience sexual assault in their abuse because it is impossible to be able to consent to sexual intimacy when your partner is physically or psychologically abusing you.
We're going to have to leave it there. Really, thank you so much, Erin.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.